The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
They never knew or had the wisdom to overcome problems that face mankind. They always went about it the wrong way. Since they are blinded within the desperate motive of profit.
Hey everybody, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today we're kicking off guest host. Bringing back some of our favorite guest hosts from the past. Today we've got Dr. Jameson joining us.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Do you all remember Dr. Jameson? If not, he's going to tell you a little about about himself.
Yes, I'm Dr. Jameson, Tarif Jameson. I teach at African American Studies at UAB. And yeah, my primary interest is on black psychology. And yeah, me and Ruben met and we've been connecting on these type of issues for a while. So yeah.
All right, so obviously, Ruben, I'm here. Dr. Jameson's replacing Basil today, so we've got Ilya and Patrick joining us.
That's right.
You want to say hello?
We are here.
We are here. Hello.
Hello, everyone. Back again.
Just a reminder that you can find... that you can find everything we do on loosecannons.net, our writings, all of our podcasts, and... our Loose Cannons Year One montage and eventually other videos as well. Plus, we've allow comments on it now. So if you start a discussion, one of us will, you know, continue it with you. It'll be like talking to a famous person, except for not famous and not really a person either.
Yep.
Today we're going to be discussing, I already forgot the year. You said 1979?
Mm-hmm.
79.
1979's Bush Mama, directed by Halle Jarima. But before we do that, let's do this. Heralds and announcements. Patrick?
I don't have any movies to herald or denounce. I would like to denounce another podcast.
Okay.
I'm going to denounce BuzzFeed's Internet Explorer. I was kind of into the first few episodes, but the last episode made me so angry that I deleted all of the episodes from my computer. So it is now no longer on my computer, and I never want to hear it again.
Nice.
And why was that, Patrick?
they do a segment called Follow Friday, where they talk about a Twitter user that they're really into, or somebody on a social media platform that they're really into. And the person that they chose to talk about is somebody who I detest very much. And the amount that they gushed over this person sort of made me turn on them immediately. And I was just like, these fucking idiots. And that was it. I was like, I'm done with these guys.
Sounds like they had a problematic fave.
I didn't hear that. You were breaking up.
Sounds like they had a problematic fave.
Yes, they did. Very problematic.
Dr. Jameson, have you watched anything in the last 3 months since we last recorded that you would like to herald or denounce?
No, I can't think of anything.
No. Okay.
Not really. Nothing special. Nothing great.
Alright, I'm going to herald Apichit Pong Wirasethukal's Tropical Melody, the film that when I first watched it 10 years ago, I hated it. But when I rewatched it recently, I liked it quite a bit. There's probably a lot of stuff written on it that I'm sure you could just Google and read. And I doubt that I would be adding much to it, except I'll say, if anyone hasn't already, the Thai music is the best music. And every time that people were doing Thai music in movies, I enjoy it so much. It's like half of the reason why I like Tears of the Black
yes,
Tiger.
Yes, that movie's got a great soundtrack, for sure. For sure.
Well, this one has a movie where there's like a woman who's like doing karaoke, and she calls up one of the main characters on stage to do it with her, and they sing a duet, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's really cool. That makes me want to watch that movie.
Well, if one of you watches it and really likes it, then maybe it can make the canon, and Basil is probably going to put Uncle Boonmei on the canon, and then we can have double a Peach at Pong with our set.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say I'll probably watch Uncle Boonmei before Tropical Malady, but I might get around to that one.
Yeah, maybe by the time we do the canon, we can all practice pronouncing his name, right? Like we always, it's always like.
I think I'm doing it right.
Down. I think we got it down.
I've got it down.
Really?
It's Apichatpong.
Am I doing it right, Patrick?
Yeah, it sounded like you said
Apichatpong Wirasethakul.
Apichatpong Wirasethakul.
Yes.
That's it.
There you go.
That is it.
Okay.
All over that.
Play along, listeners.
Speaking of directors, his names are hard to pronounce. Bush Mama. Dr. Jameson, you want to give us a brief summary of what the movie is about?
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it's like, it's pretty straightforward. So there's this black woman... the film was 1979, but I'm gonna say like during like the Black Power movement, and her dealing with being like this single black mother and how you deal with gender. Then what else we have? We have the hooking with abortion, the police, prison, addiction, the whole history of black women. So this single black woman dealing with all these issues within the West Coast context. And so, yeah, it goes other places. But yeah, pretty much like this journey of this black woman trying to find herself and deal with the issues that you have to deal with as being a black woman during that time period.
Single because her husband's been wrongly imprisoned.
Yes. And then I didn't want to get too much. I'm doing some of those things later. But yes. Yes.
I assume it takes place between like 1965 and 1969.
Yeah.
Because after Malcolm X has been assassinated.
Mm-hmm. So that's, and then you see some of those, when you see some of the images, you see, let's say like the Black Power movement, Black Panthers during that time period, and some of the things they were organizing around. So yeah, I would go that time period.
All right. Ilya, what did you think of this movie?
Do I say whether I liked it or not? Or
You guys are breaking up a lot, so it's a little hard to... So it's on me now? I'm doing the...
Yeah, okay. Yeah. What did you think?
Thumbs up or thumbs down? Yeah, thumbs up for me, even though it was a hard movie to watch on a lot of levels. Mm-hmm. I thought, for me, the most impressive part of the movie was actually the relationship between the main characters, TC and Dorothy, and the bond that those two had, and how the movie kind of reflected that bond in really interesting ways and made the two into a very interesting couple that kind of defied a lot of, I guess, stereotypical depictions of black men also, or like black couples in cinema, where it's always like, well, the man is like absent or, you know, terrible at being a father or terrible at being a husband. And here it's basically shown that this is a very happy family, or like a family that really functions well and great and just doesn't, and it's the system that kind of destroys them. And I felt like it argued for that really effectively, for like this dream of like having a good like family, a working family and a working relationship. But like getting undercut at every moment. And so I really like that depiction, but like certain elements like formally were pretty hard to take, and the story got really hard to take at a certain point. Just, it was very emotionally draining. So I give it a thumbs up, but I'm not sure I'll watch it again very soon.
I did feel like
you're not next, Patrick.
Oh, I'm not next.
No, I'm next.
Okay. Oh, right. I'm sorry. I was thinking because the summary came from your feed. I was like, okay, well, I'm up next. But no, you're right. You're next.
I did not like this movie. There's a major reason why that I don't want to get into yet. I'll save that for later, but aesthetically, it mostly didn't work for me. that was definitely a problem. And I guess I felt like it was a little on the nose in a way. It was disappointing when compared to a movie like Killer of Sheep, which is pretty similar, and a lot of the topics discussed, but I thought was much better, more aesthetically dense, and told about a lot of the same problems in a way that I thought was more poetic and beautiful. So. Now to you, Patrick.
Okay. Sorry, you're breaking up again. So I did feel like at a certain point this movie was piling on a little bit. That was kind of the problem I had with it. It got a little bit of like the Bicycle Thieves syndrome, where it was like, look at this tragedy, look how tragic it is. It got a little bit of that. And I also was comparing it to Killer of Sheep in my head. Also, Charles Burnett was the DP on this one, so there's your connection there for Killer of Sheep. But I did think one of the things I didn't like about this movie is that it didn't seem to have a sense of humor about anything, really. And I mean, it is tackling like some really heavy, dark themes. And so, you know, humor probably doesn't play well into that, but I thought that there were some sequences that were supposed to be kind of funny that were not at all funny. And so in that regard, I don't think it's as good a film as Killer of Sheep, but I did end up ultimately liking it. Just because of, I didn't have the same kind of aesthetic hangups, I guess, that Ruben had. I did think it, the way it was shot looked pretty striking. And the way that they chose to edit some of the scenes too, where they, instead of cutting between two people talking, they'll just hold on Dorothy's face throughout the whole thing and just let her react to whatever the other person's saying. I enjoyed that in certain sequences when they did it. And, you know, there were some areas where it, that kind of thing didn't work for me, but overall I enjoyed the aesthetic, and I thought that it hit with the appropriate weight right when it needed to. So I didn't think that it was mistimed. Like it didn't pull its punches at the wrong time, basically.
Now to you, Dr. Jameson.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't like it at all. I thought that, it was disconnected. So like, there's like all these, like, he's trying to like get forth all like these concepts and themes, but they're disconnected. It's like, he just throws them out there. And you're happy to hear that he's dealing with those issues, but they don't tie in together. It's almost like at least he's doing some political things, but with I don't like Tyler Perry's movies because it makes like these conceptual leaps. So like you're watching somewhere, and then boom, it just makes like this conceptual leap. And I guess like later we'll talk about it. But yeah, I didn't like it, and I thought it was just disconnected in that I like some of the issues he was dealing with, but yeah, you don't see how they tie together. It didn't make sense to me. So I would rather have it been, let's say, like a short, like different short films, like how you do like different short films and like that, like different. But yeah, other than that, it was just disconnected. Mm. It didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of ties into sort of one of my problems aesthetically. Like there were some times when the attempt to make it like avant-garde removed a context for me that I didn't feel like having the context removed made any difference. The strongest example I can think of is when there's like the woman threatening to jump, and then like we get the images of her like getting the baby from the woman and then going back inside, and then it cuts and she's still sitting down, and it wasn't super clear whether or not that was something she imagined doing or something she actually did, or it was a flashback or whatever. And like I assumed it was something that she like thought she did, because then later in the movie she had the same thing with, like, I guess it was, like, her social worker, where she imagined, like, hitting her with the bottle, and then we knew that that didn't happen because it cut to her just sitting there. But there wasn't a shot in the other thing with, like, with the baby where it made it clear that it didn't happen. Like, you could have even just had, like, the woman still talking after it cut back to her and the baby crying. And there were a lot of things like that where, like, a level of context was removed, and I didn't feel like it added anything.
And that's what I mean right there. Like, so I think at that point, he's trying to deal like with this African worldview collectivism piece. Like, okay, you can do what you want as an individual, but as a collective, we're going to save the child, and that child is going to go on and produce more people. Mm-hmm. But yet you didn't see that the connection wasn't there. But I think I saw all these points that he was trying to make, but it just didn't come together.
I'm going to disagree that it felt disconnected. I thought that the way that the movie, the connective tissue of the movie was its audio, and I thought that they did a very good job mixing in these like recurring audio motifs where they have like the social worker saying, you like, you need these forms, like, have you ever received gifts from anybody? And that you always like hear that coming out of the soundtrack at certain points. And you know, they also have like the man on the street like saying like, they killed her baby or whatever, like that comes back in the audio track. I wrote down a lot of notes about like when different audio motifs would arise. Again, they would just kind of like come out of the ether and like call back to this idea of basically the system is what the overarching connection I made to it was. Like right from the very beginning, you get the idea of these people being trapped in this system, and it's a system that is I thought the one of the most telling scenes was where she meets the man in the bar and he's talking about, you know, he's like, white people never mess with me, even though he lists all these different examples of where it's not necessarily like somebody directly messing with him, but it's the system messing with him.
Right.
And so
yeah, I wrote that down and I put a check mark down to it because I liked it. But I do feel like when I said things were on the nose, that's kind of how I felt about the audio. And it was like, I knew it was kind of supposed to be on the nose, but it still didn't work for me. Like at the beginning where she's just walking endlessly to this repetitive music. And it's like, you know, her life is just like, I mean, it reminded me of Jean Dielman. It's just like, okay, like I got what was going on here in like the first minute, and now it's going on for like 6 minutes.
I think the on purpose thing works, like both for what the movie's trying to maybe say formally, but also what the characters keep trying to say, and especially at the end. So this idea of like people not admitting that certain things are wrong or certain things are not working and certain things need to be changed, and it not being like visually apparent, you know, like you barely see white people in this movie, and so it's like, oh, what
exactly? Murdering
and
people.
It's like, oh, what do the white people do? Like they're not it's not their fault, right? It's our fault or blah blah blah. And the audio is like basically hitting those people in the face, saying like, yes, they are everywhere. You hear the audio all the time. You hear their influence everywhere. So it's like this idea that, well, the audio overcompensates for the lack of, like, you know, the lack of seeing what basically how black culture is corrupted by white society. So like the audio is trying to like overcompensate for that and like make it clear how much presence there is even within the black community.
Yes.
And I agree with y'all, like this idea that, like when he's saying that, I wrote that down as well, like that white people don't mess with me. But like we always talk about in class, like with in black psychology, have this idea of this cultural misorientation. So him not seeing, like, or them not seeing this overall structure of how white supremacy as a system impacts your life. So therefore it's manifested through these black folks, but they see, like, you know, I don't have a problem with black people, with white people, it's black people, but those black people manifest that culture misorientation, which comes through that structure and that system. So I did like that point that they were trying to bring there. Also, even the words, like the N-word, like nigger, like when they said nigger, it was like nigger as like a product of this system, like as a manifestation of like these conditions.
Sound like they were reclaiming the word.
No, not at all. There was like these niggas. So like, yeah, it was like this product. It's like a production of this particular system. So I feel y'all on that. So I was catching. I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the audio was in many ways a reflection of internalized racism.
And when y'all say audio, like, what about like a lot of things? It wasn't like the narrative or the discourse of the actual people. It was like this thing, like in the background, like the radio would be in the background. The drunk person in the back, or the preacher, like all this background noise, and like that had like this certain this discourse, that narrative that went on, if not just the people themselves. Did y'all peep that, like far as like that trying to put a particular message out, and not the, let's say, the actors themselves.
I don't, in general, I thought that they used that appropriately, like all of those different mm-hmm. audio stingers, like wherever they came from. The only point that I didn't really enjoy, I think, the way that they presented it was when TC was doing his speech, actually. For some reason, it felt weirder than the rest of the movie that he was just like sitting there like talking straight to the camera, because it was like the rest of the movie there was almost like a surrogate that the person was talking to, but he's talking like directly to the audience. He's like, you know, he's like, here's what's happening, even though it's supposed to be, I guess it's supposed to be the letter that he's writing to Dorothy. Mm. Like everything sounds like he's just talking right at you, and I enjoyed it more when the movie sort of like, you know, foregrounded, so it's like, oh yeah, somebody's talking to Dorothy, like Molly comes over and talks to Dorothy about this thing that happened or whatever, or it's like, you know, it's a preacher preaching to a congregation of people. For some reason it did feel incongruous to me, like where it was like, okay, I'm gonna like preach right at your face.
Well, also that's
it's interesting because that's by far
my favorite part. It's also for me, it actually, that's when the movie's weird formalist elements really come together really well. Like it's also scored by, like, there's jazz music playing while he's talking. Mm-hmm. And the way he speaks is like, he speaks about so many things at the same time, and yet he makes it sound very personal and like, I don't know, poetic in a way. And I felt like that really worked. If the movie was more of that, I would definitely really, really like it. As it is, I mean, I agree with you guys that there's a lot of stuff that's pretty incongruent and whatever, but like that scene really made me want to keep watching this movie and really like invest in what it's trying to do.
And I like the way that he captures the prisoners' faces and there's that one prisoner who's standing in the corner who's unwilling to come to the front of the bars, and they just look like a shadow. I don't know. I thought a lot of those images were really haunting in that section.
Yeah, my favorite. I don't know, y'all. Go ahead.
I also feel like I had, like, I'd have to have like some type of knowledge of self or historical understanding to get all the different places he was going. So I know, like, I'm hitting on the same point, but I feel like I had like to know some history, had read some things to understand the points you were trying to make. And if I don't know those things, I'm just, like they say, I'm just deaf, dumb, and blind. I don't understand what you're trying to get there.
Yeah, this is an introduction to racism movie.
Okay.
Maybe do the right thing.
This is a good introduction.
Yeah.
Racism. Welcome to racism.
This is like racism 201. This is one of the more advanced courses.
What, 370? Yeah.
It's a 370 course.
But even with that, like, if I don't set the context, like, do you get...
Oh, I'm not sure I got everything. Like,
if I don't have, like, a background. Right.
I don't know, though. I did feel like a lot of it, like, I got almost right away, like, what exactly they were talking about in the scenes. And I was like, okay, he's going over this point, he's going over this point. And I guess that's kind of what I liked about it, was that, you know, I was able to follow along with everything. And I was, you know, thinking outside of that, like, if you're not able to follow those scenes, I don't know, I didn't have a problem with the way that it disconnected reality, like Ruben was saying.
Okay,
when it shows her like taking the baby, I was like, okay, this might be happening. But when it cuts back to her, I was like, okay, it probably didn't really happen, it's probably her daydreaming. And I wrote that down in my notes too. I was like, she has a lot of daydreams about things that, you know, the way things could be and the way things really are. And I actually really enjoyed it when it got really, like, experimental, when it got really surreal, where there's all the scenes of her, I guess it's her dreams of, like, you know, her, like, laying where the cross is, like, projected onto the wall, or the person with the, it looks like they had, like, pantyhose over their head or something like that, like, just, like, writhing with the cross behind them.
Yeah, being crucified.
Yeah. The axe being brought back to from earlier in the film. I thought that those images were really striking, and I thought that it provided another level of, like, it wasn't just like, oh, here's some, you know, reality, now you can feel bad about all this reality. It was adding another layer of, like, going into the psychology of, like, where is this taking this person's mind?
Yeah,
we'll explore.
I do agree
where she's going in her head.
I do agree that it was psychological in the sense that, like, probably since a lot of awful things had happened to Dorothy and her mind was racing in all kinds of, basically all kinds of places, and trying to remember her time spent with TC at the same time, kind of living in the reality and the, like, temporal reality. And I wasn't really sure if the movie was trying to say, like, you know, she's remembering TC right now, or whether it jumped from one point of reality to another, kind of just as I don't know, like a reflection of her psychological state, or whether this was just like on purpose, like jumping around just for the sake of it. I don't know. But for me, it was more like a reflection of what was going on inside her, like kind of like Patrick said. Like, it was the form matched, like, whatever was going on psychologically. I don't know. Did you, what do you feel about that?
But real quick, like, where is her agency? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no sense of, other than, like, I guess the picture in the background. So she has the picture in the background, and as, like, this revolutionary black woman who's fighting against it. But other than that, like, where is her agency in her American context? Like, she, when does that happen? There are, like,
the
moments,
end.
Whatever, but, like, when is she, like, where's her agency, like, taking control of what she has
to do? I think
that
she's deliberately, like, her agency is removed for most of this film. I think it's a movie about her discovering that agency.
Taking
the wig off, because that's the end of the film.
Okay.
Because I'll be honest, I didn't even know she was wearing a wig throughout the film.
Right.
I don't know if that should have been obvious to me or not, if I'm just dumb. But when she takes it off at the end, I was like, oh, she, like, is her hair different? And then she's like, I took the wig off. And I was like, oh, right, she's wearing a wig. Mm. Of course she, like, I'm stupid. But I did note that earlier in the film, like, I think it's the very beginning where she's just walking through the shops and all of them are, like, wig shops. It's just like, all wigs.
Right, right.
Good hair.
It's this, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know if, you know, it's, I don't know, like, it's trying to say something about black people, like, hiding who they really are.
Intentional. Yeah. It's about meeting white, you know, standards of beauty.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's what.
For sure. I thought about that, and I was like, okay, there's a message there. But then I kind of forgot about it as the film went on. And at the end, the wig thing came back, and I was like, ah, that's the point of the whole movie. Like, it's...
All right, this is my last negative comment. All right, unless we're smart people, like we are, we're smart people, right? All right, unless that, then we, like, it's almost like we have, like, this lens, like, this conceptual lens that we're looking through, and we can pick up on these things. And I don't know, I guess my thing is that unless you have that conceptual lens, you don't get these things. The movie doesn't bring it to me like that. It's like we're there, so we're looking for it. Like, oh, that's deep, or I see that concept. But other than that, we don't get that.
Well, I don't really like to judge a movie by the lowest common denominator.
Okay.
To be like, oh, unless every single person would feel something about this, then
I mean, I would,
that makes it a bad movie. But to me, it was,
as
it
far
was,
as like, I'm trying to, like, as far as like raise, if you're doing this movie to raise consciousness, and I take this, like, you take it to church or you take it to the mosque.
Yeah, I mean,
or
I think that's, like, a fair point.
Okay.
To, yeah, like, if, you know, a movie that only works for the people who are already in it isn't a great movie. If it doesn't work at all on,
I would argue that this.
I mean, honestly, I would rather a movie do something like this where it's challenging me rather than, you know, I don't know, like spoon feeding racism to people, like Crash or something like that. Like that.
Well, yeah.
I'd much rather speaking of
continuing a long history of comparing a movie to the worst movie of its type to say it's better than it.
Okay.
Like the time we talked about Black Book, and Ilya was like, well, it's better than Schindler's List. And I was like, that's not a high goal to reach.
Well, I was talking about it in a very specific way, how it was better than Schindler's List, at least.
it's not a high goal for us, but again, like, that's, you know, in the public movie consciousness, I'm sure a lot of people would say, like, Schindler's List is a high watermark, or a lot of people would say, like, you know, I've seen people really high on the movie Crash, and it's like, you know, it won the Academy Award. It's, by public standards, I suppose, like, a really well, you know, regarded movie, and to us, it's a joke. because it's just like
also
racism. Now, if we're talking about an action movie, I'm just going to say whether it's better or worse than the Boondock Saints.
Also, I don't. Well, it feels a little bit like we're arguing like a little bit two things at the same time, though. Like it's on the one hand, we're saying, "Well, this movie's really on the nose," and on the other hand, we're saying, "We don't know what the hell it's trying to say," like, or it's like not expressing these things congruently or whatever. So, like, what is it then?
No.
It's like I feel like that's probably both true. I mean, that's kind of what I feel this movie does. Both it does both those things at the same time, which makes it really confusing. You know.
Yeah, I like that it. I have
a specific instance. I don't know. Have y'all ever seen the "It Was a Good Day" music video? Sure. Or
Yeah.
Okay. So like early rap music videos, literally they would just shoot the lyrics, and like that would be like the whole music video. It would like be him playing basketball, then him rolling dice, then him eating breakfast, and him driving around without an AK.
Mr.
Right?
Ron got a triple double.
They don't show him getting the actual triple double. Thank God.
Well, they couldn't show that because Ice Cube can't play basketball. That's a lie.
But they don't show anybody who does get killed in South Central LA. So,
but so there's that scene where TC is being led into jail, and I don't know if you guys are listening to the lyrics, but it's like literally what's going on the screen.
I did write that down.
Going to jail. I was like, walking down a long hallway with a white man.
We get
locked up for a crime we didn't commit.
That was
For me, it was like on the nose about like concepts that were hard to understand.
Yeah.
So it was like yelling white privilege at you, but not really explaining what it is. It was just like, white privilege is something white people have. You walk down the long hallway.
Yeah, the white man. Whoever that is.
That takes me back. There's a movie that was released 2 years before this called Alambrista, which was about illegal Mexican immigrants. And there's a song that plays over the end credits of that. It's basically just the plot of the entire movie, just redone in a song. And I was like, this is just like that song. It's just like the most on the nose like thing.
There's a Western movie that does that. I can't remember what it is, that they make fun of at the beginning of Blazing Saddles. It might be High Noon, but I'm not sure.
I mean, it's hard to argue that song isn't like super on the... I agree. I just kind of felt like there must have been the purpose for that. Like there must have been. I mean, otherwise it's just ridiculous. Why... Hey, just in case people aren't realizing what's happening visually, just say
I laughed at that part. Speaking of this movie being not humorous.
I think that's unintentional humor, but maybe not. I don't know.
I
thought that there were some spots where you see the man who's talking about white people never messed with him, like just being drunk and like hugging a tree or a post or whatever that is he's hugging. I thought that was kind of supposed to be funny, but I was like, no, it's kind of sad. Like, I just...
Well, you could argue that was also played as sad, though. Like, I'm not sure it was supposed to...
Yeah, I think
make
so,
you
yeah.
laugh.
And it was interesting, right as I was thinking that about the movie, I was like, none of this really makes me laugh. And then there's a scene where you get the character of Molly, who's the one who's basically... talking about how all the militant stuff like shouldn't go on, like how much she dislikes it and all that. Like you get her laughing directly into the camera about stuff that's not really funny, and Dorothy actually says to her, she says, "Molly, it's not funny. Like it's not supposed. Like it's not what you're laughing at isn't funny. It's sad." And I was like, "Wow, the movie like almost knew that I was thinking that at that point. It was like, this is not, you know, it's not a joke."
The other part that I laughed at is when the young girl who's like becoming part of the militants is like trying to tell Dorothy's daughter about like being a militant, and she describes the woman as her mother, and she's like, "No, this is my mother. Dorothy's my mother." And she's like, "No, like she's my mother, she's your mother. Yeah. It's like Mother Africa.
I did like
doesn't understand.
I thought she was.
It reminded me of that scene in God of Thunder when that guy is like, wait, okay, so he's just like, he's like, a sergeant is better than a general or whatever.
Right. Like this whole worldview clash. Yeah, it's like,
Two star generals like, better than a seven star marshal? What?
Yeah. Right. What are you talking about?
I did like the character though, the militant neighbor girl. I thought she was actually pretty funny for being the most militant character. Like she's actually like pretty lighthearted and like easygoing. She's like, oh, yeah. I just got back from a demonstration.
Oh, it's a protest down the street.
Yeah. And I think I like that too, because what it was is like it brought like the whole militant protest radicalism, like everyday people.
Yeah.
Like it's not something abstract way somewhere else. Like, nah, this is the girl next door who's talking about who they beat down or who they shot. And yeah, you can. That's how you bring people into consciousness, by making on that average everyday level.
There's like,
yeah, that was good.
An implication that the reason that she's part of the process is because the protest was down the street.
Yeah. Right.
Like if the protest had been like 20 blocks away, she wouldn't be militant.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I just got this poster at the protest down the street.
Right, yeah, just
like,
right around the corner.
Like,
right.
It's like, what's it for? And she's like, I don't know, it's just down the street.
Like, your life. Yeah, your people.
So get people involved.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to the ending, which gets to my major complaint with the film. But I remember that Patrick was kind of hinting at that, too. So maybe he should start it off.
Okay. So I don't know. I guess this hit me. It did what it was trying to do emotionally to me. I was kind of wrecked by this ending because I didn't see it coming at all. And I was like, oh, wow. That's, because not knowing the wig thing, too, I was a little, like, caught off guard by all that. And I was like, oh, it's tying all of that back together nicely. All the stuff that's been going on about Dorothy's pregnancy gets tied back in, and I thought it was an apt metaphor. I thought the metaphor of what happens to her daughter worked for me. It was like it reminded me of that the Bob Marley song, I Shot the Sheriff, where he says every time I plant the seed, he says kill it before it grows. And it was that was like, when she's sitting in the jail cell and she's basically like had the miscarriage at that point. I was thinking about that in my head. I was like, oh, that's a metaphor for what the white supremacists are trying to do. Like they're trying to stomp out this, this burgeoning life, this hope for the future for black people. And I was like, it just worked for me. It did on an emotional level what I felt like it was trying to do.
So there's a white police officer who is raping Dorothy's daughter, and Dorothy walks in on it and attacks him, and then she is sent to jail, and then when she's beat up in jail, I mean, I don't know if miscarriage is a harsh enough word. I mean, it's sort of like an unchosen abortion, like they abort her baby against her will.
The white people took my baby,
So I like what you just said. But like my thing about it, and like this is kind of a high-minded complaint in some ways, but like I feel like when there's a movie that like talks about like little stuff and like how important it is to focus on like getting your welfare person treating you badly and like your friends having like internalized racism and stuff like that, to like end on a note of something where everyone was like, okay, well, yeah, we all agree that police officers shouldn't rape people, and like it kind of gives them a defense to be like, well, that's just one bad apple or whatever. It kind of washes away all that small stuff in a way by trying to make like that big dramatic moment. It makes the small stuff seem smaller, when I feel like I like these movies the best when it gives the small stuff the weight that it actually deserves, as opposed to like...
Yeah. Well, first of all, like, y'all help me out. Where did Mama come from? Like, where did Mama come from? Like, so he's about to rape the daughter. Maybe I missed the chronology, but like the mama just pops up.
Well, she was coming home from work.
She's coming home
from
work.
Yeah, because that's what. It,
oh, so they're at the house.
The timeline jumps a little bit because it shows her in jail first.
He takes her up to her own
house. Okay, all right. And then they start on the corner. So he's projecting like his stereotypical image of, you don't live here, you must be a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So I was worried about the jump, and then that stereotypical image was problematic.
It's pretty confusing.
Her daughter's telling the truth, like she is waiting for her to come home. Yeah.
I mean, by then I was also I was kind of checked out emotionally when that started happening. I agree with Ruben that actually what made me interested in the movie were thing like little, small things and getting the details right and getting like the emotional impact of small everyday you know effects of racism, getting those right, and not necessarily having that you know big dramatic scene at the end, which just kind of comes out of nowhere. I mean, you can argue that these things happen, of course, but I'm not sure it necessarily had to happen in this movie this way, because I'm not sure that the point being made is really worth making within this context. You know, like it's already talking about what like imprisoning half of a family does to a family. It talks about what living on welfare does to a family and does to a single woman. You know, like all these things, which are like topics in and of themselves that are like very hard to cover accurately. And, you know, and then it kind of jumps to this whole new level. And then it ends basically on this. Like, I probably wanted to end on a very, for lack of a better word, angry note. You know, it wanted to like let you go and not let you go like easy. It wanted to let you go with this like anger inside of you. But, I'm not sure it actually... I like that part also didn't work for me. I mentioned that right in the beginning, that the end was like really hard to take and also hard to invest in and kind of feel like this is, you know, that this is... that this belongs in this movie at all.
Yeah, I...
So was it like a catharsis? Like this built up, you know, like tension with racism, and then you know let it all out at the end. Like
let's get out of this movie and let's be really angry. Like let this anger carry towards maybe like action, because I mean I feel like this movie is very much about like people who maybe normally don't partake in activism, like kind of advocating activism in a way or advocating change.
I see that. Yeah.
I wrote down a couple of things in my notes that I felt like tied into the way it ends. There's something that TC says when he's doing his monologue. He talks about how everything starts at home. And so I think what he's talking about there is the whole idea of being militant starts with, you know, what has happened to you personally, like what comes out of that. And
Right.
That is, it's like the inciting incident for her finally realizing, you know, her own militant feelings. Like it's her coming into her own and being like, okay, I'm over the facade. I'm gonna fully commit to this now. And you know, it also brings back the audio of the old man saying they killed her baby. You know, they took her baby or whatever.
No, I think that's a good point, because I think that's why The Neighbor works so well, because it is like this everyday, you know, things that impact you, as well as I remember like being an undergrad and we had like this Pan-African student organization. And if there was something actually going on, like an actual police brutality case or the war, like people, you're not just talking theoretical abstract concepts. It's something they see every day. So I think that's a good point. And that ties in like to why The Neighbor is so important. It's like, yeah, around the corner, like this is your life. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, but there's also the thing that, so that woman who, I don't know exactly how to describe her. It looks like she runs some sort of shop. She gives her Dorothy pie at one point in the movie.
Yeah.
If you remember that woman, she's talking about needing a plant, and she's like, you can't just go and kill a couple white people. Uh-huh. It's like, we want a big piece of Uncle Sam's pie, right? But isn't that kind of what Dorothy does at the end of the movie, though? You know, she kills or hurts this one white person, and then she's, you know, she's in jail. She didn't have a plan.
Yeah, no plan. And then I wrote it down. No, it's plan and calculation.
Yeah.
So just no like this response, yeah. just like that's not a plan, or nor yeah. is that a calculation. Yeah.
So do you think the movie's totally on Dorothy's side, or do you think that it's split between Dorothy and the other woman, or do you think it's a tragedy in the sense that even becoming militant?
Oh yeah, sure it's very tragedy. Yeah,
well, I think it's tragic, but I think it's more of like a metaphorical tragedy where it's saying like it's doing that thing of like it like the police like trying to stomp out that militancy before it can grow. Like that baby inside of her is basically representative of that. It's like, all right, as soon as a black person is like, what's the word? Like as soon as they self-actualize that militancy, then the police are already on top of them. Like, oh no, you're somebody that we got to stomp out. Like we've got to keep this from growing anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's metaphorical in that sense that it's showing like the way society treats that militancy, like the way that it tries to deal with it.
Yeah.
Poor unborn black babies don't even get to be people. They gotta be metaphors.
Yeah. This movie also had like a weird like Marxist edge to it, kind of throughout when TC speaks about like saying, like people, he says something like people who love money are animals. They're all animals. And like that's like the root of everyone's evil. And people meaning like a cross racial divide. Like everyone who loves money, they're all basically animals. And that kind of adds like a weird other political level to this. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that it's in it, but I guess that adds to this movie's like philosophy in a way. Like it's doesn't just come at like its political opinions just through like its opinion on like white versus black, or like what white society does to black society, but also how, you know, white society is also a capitalist society. And black society, by necessity, is also capitalist society. So capitalism, in a way, is even at the root of a lot of what is to blame for all the problems that go on. I mean, her being on welfare is a obvious like result of this. So, you know, the movie has like this weird little Marxist-y edge to it, which I found pretty interesting also.
I did also.
Now that's a good point, because I think as I was looking at it, I took around in my notes within the black political struggle, power struggle, you see like cultural nationalism versus political nationalism, and with the cultural nationalism, like back to Africa and African names, dashikis, those things, whereas the revolutionary or political nationalism deals with that Marxism and that economic factor. So I saw him kind of, you know, balancing those two things together, and not even balancing, but trying to put those two things together. So. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
There's a definite black arts movement vibe to this movie. Mm-hmm. That part with that we talked about before in the prison. It's kind of like TC is kind of like speaking poetry. Then you got the jazz underneath, and then you've got all the imprisoned black men because they're not able to express their full black masculinity.
Yeah. And it reminded me of this when I was teaching at Temple, we were talking about ancient Egypt and the whole culture nationalism piece. And the brother raised his hand. He's like, I want to know what ancient Kemet has to say about all these roaches in my projects. You know what I mean? So like that type of, like you're saying, the political and economic context, like how do we deal with that? Not just, you know, this back to Africa, Bush mama. That, yeah. So yeah.
I also think there's a funny bit of, I guess, like appropriation in it, where he talks about we use right on as our slogan for the Black Panther movement, and they talked about ride on deodorant, and I was like, oh buddy, that's about
yeah, that's good, you're right,
the most crazy capitalistic appropriation that you can think of.
Dang. Yeah,
do you guys ever follow or look at the Twitter account called Brand Saying Bay?
No,
because that's all it is collecting the tweets of, you know, corporations using modern slang and looking ridiculous while doing it. It started when I think it was like Denny's posted like pancakes is bae, And someone was like, this is enough. That's,
yeah, you're right.
I think to something that Ruben was saying earlier about the ending kind of giving it out by saying, like, oh, there's this one bad apple. I think the movie takes a more, like, I don't know, it takes a more metaphorical approach and kind of paints all of the police officers as sort of like system, like the overarching.
Well, yeah,
system.
They are constantly shooting everybody, no matter what they're doing. Yeah. Every time we see a police officer, they're murdering someone.
Like that's their only purpose in the movie is to show up and destroy something, basically. And I do think it's it was really timely to me to see the police officers in this movie. Talk, like, you can like hear them talking in the background, and they're like, yeah, she took his pants off and made it look like a rape or whatever like that. Like, they're just blaming all of this horribleness on her and saying, right, like, it's her fault. And I was like, oh wow, like, that's that's basically still happening today.
Yeah, God, I was thinking about that too, like the scene where the cop shoots the black man who still has his handcuffs on, I think. Right when he tries to he's still shoving me or whatever, and then he like cop just shoots. Like, watching that right now is like awful on so many levels.
Well, the guy with the axe, just, who even has a weapon. Okay, the guy with the axe who has a weapon. First of all, they shoot him like 3 times in the chest, definitely making sure they kill him. And then when the cop runs up to him, he puts the gun to his neck, even though he's definitely dead at that point, just to be like, hey, if this guy moves again, I'm going to shoot him right in the neck.
And then, like, so you see some contemporary
where it's
things.
Like, you would think, like, in that scenario, first of all, that you wouldn't shoot to kill, and that if when he's on the ground, you'll run up and take the axe away, and then you would get help. Right. But no, he runs up. He's like, if he's not dead, he's definitely going to be dead after this.
And I guess the sad part is that like y'all said, it's still now Black Lives Matter movement, all that. Yeah,
you don't even have to be a cop; you could be a rented cop who donated a bunch of money, and you just get to kill people and get away with it.
But I also wonder why he didn't bring in. Because I had like this Black Panther vibe as far as like the actual things they do. Like, why he didn't bring in those type of things?
Yeah.
You know, like, I guess it's
no
Bush
Black
Mama,
Panthers
but.
In the movie.
Yeah, like, or some type of political movement.
Kind of her at the
fighting
end.
Back. Yeah.
You mean in this movie?
But I guess. Yeah. Not, I don't know. Like, I'm just wondering, like, how come he didn't insert those at the end when we're dealing with that instead of just this rage? Mm-hmm. Like, the plan and calculation. That would be the Black Panther Party, self-defense, protecting yourself from these people. Yeah.
Was this after the Olympics?
Olympics 68, right? That's 68.
Yeah. And we played it. End with that photograph.
Yeah. That would be tight. Yeah.
There you go.
That photograph always works. I just gotta put it at the end of all the movies that I make.
Malcolm?
Yeah.
I'm saying you do the Malcolm every time.
Oh, yeah?
Well, it probably, in a way.
What can
maybe
we do?
You could say that it wanted to end badly to show not the way that it should work, but the way it doesn't work. Like, it's like, well, she tried it this way. She tried it this organized, crazy, you know, like, I'm going to kill you way. And not in the let's organize and then maybe let's beat them this way. Like, she... Okay. And like in the way that the movie is just
that
like say, well, and that way doesn't work. So try a different way.
Right.
Yeah. I also feel like it's kind of wanting to its audience to have that realization too. Like, it's kind of wanting the audience to say, like, you know, this, you know, sooner or later it's gonna be real for you. Like, it's gonna hit your home sooner or later in one of these instances because it's giving you all these different instances of ways that it hits this woman and, you know, all of the everyday ways that it can go wrong, and it just takes, you know, like one little thing and then it's like,
and you
all
can,
right,
you can wait until you don't have time to plan and calculate, or you can plan and calculate before your body's against the wall.
Yeah,
because I thought that it was deliberate the way it did kind of jump to certain bad instances happening, like when TC goes to jail, like there's almost no warning. Mm-hmm. It's like he's going to get a job and then he's in jail, and it's just like,
yeah,
it's like, yeah, what,
That was the disconnected moment that worked.
Yes,
for me
it
the
was.
Most.
Yeah, because I was like, I was like, my mind filled in the blanks. I was like, of course, like I can.
Yeah,
it's totally realistic that that would happen.
Anything can happen.
That's like
you don't even find out until later that he's wrongfully
accused. In a way, it's like the worst part of it is like, oh, of course he like goes to prison, and like it's so easy to fill in those blanks. That was like the most depressing thing about it. It's like how easy that was to just like, oh, right, that happened.
Okay. Sure. Dang.
Yeah, that's really awful. I don't know. I still think like the way this movie touches upon things and kind of talks about them in an interesting way. I feel like TC and Dorothy as a couple was pretty cool. Like the way that the movie showed that they had real affection for each other was also really, really cool and kind of played into this idea of like, well, this is how people deal with this in an everyday way. Like they don't like they manage to also keep a relationship going, even though maybe someone's in prison. You know, it doesn't mean that they can still have affection for each other and try to deal with it in a constructive way that kind of helps both of them, you know, helps both of them survive because they're each in like awful situations. And
I was going to say there's also the part towards the beginning where they keep talking about her drinking, or I guess it goes on throughout the movie where they keep talking about her drinking. But to me, I was like, it almost seems like that you're crazy for wanting to, you know, do something that, you know, maybe gives you a little bit of a reprieve from all the terrible stuff that's happening around you, like all the stress that's happening around you. Like, you're crazy for wanting to drink or whatever. Like, you can't do that. You can't have any sort of recreation. It reminded me a little bit of something we talked about in an earlier podcast, the Blood Spattered Bride podcast, where basically the old school psychological diagnosis for a woman who was unhappy with her marriage was that she was crazy. That's what I reminded me of when they're like berating her. Berating her at the beginning for having brain damage. Like, you know, you're brain damaged for wanting to drink or whatever. And I was like, well, she just wants, you know, some relief, some reprieve.
So what she also tells him when TC's in prison, I think he says something like you I can hear you telling me that I should be gentle, or like I should stay a gentle person or whatever, because otherwise I'm no use to anybody. And it's like such a weird thing to say to someone who's in prison. But it also like I thought that was pretty cool. Like it worked for me. Like, I felt like that's something that a person maybe would say to another person when they're in prison. It's like, well, yeah, you know, I like you because you're, like, gentle. Or, like, you're the you, you know, don't let this change you or whatever.
Can't lose your tenderness.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. I kind of felt like that was pretty cool.
I like them as characters. I like TC and Dorothy as characters.
I like the movie more now than I did when the podcast started, but I still don't think that I like it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think I see y'all bring some good points and I see some things, but yeah, I still no. Me and my wife won't pop it in this weekend and check it.
Feel like even though I saw it much longer ago, that stuff from Killer of Sheep still sticks with me in a way in which I don't think things from this movie are going to. Mm-hmm. Like the part when the engine falls out the back of the truck in Killer of Sheep, and I was just like, it's just like an engine, but it was like so devastating. They were like, don't let it fall out the back of the truck, don't let it fall out the back of the truck, and it falls out the back of the truck.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this wouldn't happen to rich people. No, it only happens to poor people. It just made me so sad. I don't know if anything's going to stick with me like that, or like the kids jumping from roof to roof they're like looking up, and it's like, this is how kids find play, they jump between roofs because they don't have anything else to know.
There's definitely an exuberance to Killer of Sheep that this movie doesn't have. This movie's a lot more straight-faced than that one. And I like that about Killer of Sheep, too. I do like Killer of Sheep more than this movie, but I do also enjoy this movie.
Okay. Does anyone have anything else want to say about Bush Mama?
Nope. I think we said it. I think we nailed this one, guys. As Basil says.
Yeah. All right. Well, join us next week with Michael Dwyla will be returning, who you know and love, and sadly Patrick will be missing.
Sorry. That's a nice ending theme for our podcast.
Yeah. See ya.
On Guest Host Month. And of course, as always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars, write a nice review, and tell your African American studies professors about it, because apparently they'll be on the podcast.
Yes.
If you do.
Yes.
Maybe we'll get to talk about some women's studies topics when Lily's on.
All right. Very nice.
True.
Yeah, we could get all sorts of different people on here. Okay. Thanks for coming, Dr. Jameson.
Thanks, Dr. Jameson.
And
good being chilling with y'all. Yes, indeed.
Nice talking to you again.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Peace.
We say bye on this podcast.
Bye.
Just another white man putting down a black man.
Yep. We'll be right back.